So that's Jenny Hagan with Ameren, Missouri, and that's why you may be without power. We have lost transmission at our Quix AM tower, so Quix AM is off, and right now Cress is off as well. But we are broadcasting on Quix 92.5 FM and streaming at centralmoinfo.com. And J.W. Ballinger has ventured through the cold.
Not many people out this morning, Brandon.
No, I would say traffic is down a little bit.
Yes,
thanks
it certainly
for, is. Thanks for coming on in for your History on the Radio segment.
You're welcome. Well, today we're going to talk about two subjects, and we're going to feature a program on the place of taverns and tavern owners in Randolph County's history. And then the second part of the program, we're going to honor the birth of a Randolph County person, a prominent black American poet who lived here for 2 years, Melvin Tolson. So there's the subjects for
J.W.
today.
J.W. called me and said, what do you think? Should we talk taverns or not? Well, I mean, whether you're a fan of taverns or not, it's a part of our history.
Well, it certainly is. And as I'll state later, there's both infamous and famous characters that came from those. So we're going to stick with the famous characters for the first part of this. Over the years, we've talked about grocery stores, restaurants, cafes, schools, you name it, along with a lot of other subjects. We've raised the subjects, we've discussed them, and we've put them to bed. We're going to talk about the saloon, the bar, the tavern. It's a more difficult subject, to say the least, but one that has produced some prominent citizens and, as I stated, some infamous characters. And so today we're only going to talk about the prominent citizens. Now, recently a question was posed by a 1990s Moberly High School graduate about Moberly's East Side. They were asking, what taverns were situated on the east side? Now, I didn't get into it why they were asking. I just tried to answer their question. The next step was to research the businesses located on the block of East Coast, starting at Moulton Street next to the railroad tracks and going east to Alt Street. But before we talk about these taverns on the east side, what about the saloons and bars and taverns around the county? What part did they play in our history and our development of this area? From the book History of Randolph County, Missouri by Alexander H. Waller, published in 1920. If you read it, it'll take you at least 18 chapters before you even find the mention of a saloon or a saloon owner in print. So what part, if any, did the saloon play in early Randolph County history? I would certainly appreciate any of the listeners out there who have knowledge about places and things that occurred in the early 1800s that they've been told, that talk about places that served alcohol and how they were dealt with. Nevertheless, in the records, there are numerous things that tell us that communities established very early ordinances and local laws that placed penalties for rowdiness and misbehavior. So obviously, there must have been places where beer and liquor were served. Some examples of these early locations could reasonably be shown along the trails and roads that were traveled by early settlers. They would stop and rest their horses or themselves. If you remember that the road from Huntsville to Paris had several stops, including a place originally known as Old Tavern. That place later became known as Allen, Missouri, the village out along North Morley about where McDonald's restaurant is. These locations along those types of roads were likely for a place to get in out of the weather, to get a hot meal, have a drink of ale, and perhaps a place to sleep overnight. And as towns grew, particularly those who grew magically due to the construction of a railroad, where the workers who built the railroad and some of the general population created the clientele for the growth of such establishments. An early photo of Moberly's first business district on Sturgeon Street shows no less than three buildings advertising St. Louis beer. Now back to Waller's book on Randolph County. In an article entitled From Moberly's First Newspaper, which contained a business directory, reflects the following, quote, Manlin and Company Saloon, Southwest Corner, Reed and Sturgeon Streets, unquote. This newspaper is dated March 10th, 1869. There is mention of at least 50 other businesses in this article, but this is the first mention that I can find of a saloon or a saloon owner. The next mention is in a section of prominent Moberly citizens that were involved in the business of alcohol. And in this series of profiles of the 1920 book are the following. The first name I come across is Joseph O'Keefe. Now, he was part of the O'Keefe family. He was secretary of O'Keefe Brothers Wholesale Grocery. Now, while it doesn't spell it out directly in this article, we're aware that the warehouse that the O'Keefe brothers had was a storage for groceries as well as beer and liquor. Another name that's familiar to citizens of the county is T.R. or Tony Fiorita. His profile states that he has, quote, had a successful business career and is an example of what can be accomplished by thrift and industry, coupled with a determination to succeed, unquote. Now, Tony started in the fruit business. He later added candies and ice cream. Then in 1919, he bought a saloon, and the story of his wine dip, used to flavor both alcoholic and non-alcoholic drinks, is fairly familiar. Other names in this Randolph County history book include Houston Matthews, known as Hughes Matthews. He operated a saloon at the location on Reed where the Chamber of Commerce office is now. And before, during, and after Prohibition, his business was a well-known drinking establishment. Now, during Prohibition, which was from 1920 to 1933, he operated in that same location, but his saloon now became a milk parlor. That's an interesting subject to get into. The final examples of prominent saloon owners are the brothers Patrick and Edward Short. They operated a saloon at 320 West Coates Street in Moberly. And we have examples of the whiskey jug that the Shorts sold their whiskey in on display at the Randolph County Historical Society. Now, on Coates and Ault, where I grew up in the latter part of the 1940s and the early 1950s, there were two taverns and one liquor store. Both of these, quote, beer joints, unquote, as my parents and grandparents called them, were off limits to me, with one exception. I was allowed to run errands for the fire department on the east side, fire station number 2, where I could run around the corner and pick up bologna sandwiches or boiled eggs for the fireman's lunch. So that brings us back a little closer to today, so let's look at 1949 and 1969. In 1949, the city directory, while it's not exhaustive in terms of the places that sold beer, it lists 11 taverns. Then in 1969, the city directory lists 11, with 2 being in Higbee and 1 in Huntsville. Now, as I said, these aren't exhaustive lists because there were lots of places where food was served that wasn't distinctly a tavern, that was also a cafe that might have sold a low-alcohol beer. So, in answering that original inquiry, there were 2 taverns on the east side up until the 1980s. And it's very interesting to go through some of those old buildings and see some of the remnants of what made those taverns the east side taverns. Now, of course, there was a hotel on the east side called the Baltimore, and at one time they had a drinking establishment inside the Baltimore, but as far as taverns by themselves, there were 2. Now, if you'd like to dig into this a little further, I'd suggest you get that History of Randolph County by Alexander Waller. That was written in 1920, so it takes you back to the early days of the county and of the cities within the county, and provides a lot of interesting information. Also, if you come by the Historical Society, sometimes the first thing we send you to are the Moberly-Randolph County City directories, because they give you a good starting place for finding out what was in a certain block at a certain time. And of course, I use some of my own memories for this particular segment as well.
Did Prohibition knock out the tavern business for a while?
And it did.
Was there a boon right after?
There was certainly a boon right after. In fact, if you read some of the stories, very quickly once Prohibition was canceled or voted out, they came back into effect. And I think the milk parlor is a unique way to put it, but it frankly, Mr. Matthews, Hughes Matthews, designated his place as a milk parlor, in fact probably served milk. That doesn't mean that in the basement or someplace around they didn't have a speakeasy, and I think that they did.
Yeah. All right. J.W. Ballinger, History on the Radio here. Coming up next, we're going to shift and bring up another topic.
Whatever you need printed, whether it's on a shirt, jacket, or hat, the name to remember is Joyce's Embroidery in Clarence. From special designed shirts to personal bling to letter jackets to promotional items for your school, business, or nonprofit organization, if you need it, Joyce's Embroidery in Clarence can print it. And there's no setup fee or hidden charges for special designed shirts from 1 to 1,000. See more at joycesembroidery.com. Joyce's is even your UPS drop-off spot.
This is Joyce. Just remember, anything is possible at Joyce's Embroidery in downtown Clarence. Just ask.
Heritage Hills Golf Course is a great place to hold your wedding reception. You can choose the spacious clubhouse for parties of up to 100 guests. The Heritage Hills staff will work with you to make this milestone in your life a very special day, assisting you with all the details like a caterer and refreshments. Contact the clubhouse at 660-269-8659 or go online at heritagehillsgolfcourse.com for more details. Heritage Hills Golf Course, a special place to celebrate.
History on the radio, quarter before 9 o'clock with J.W. Ballinger. What's next?
We're going to talk about a gentleman who was born and stayed here for 2 years of his life. His name is Melvin Tolson. He was a poet, a teacher, and a philosopher.
Pull your mic up just a little. There we go.
Okay.
There we go.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Because February is Black History Month, we're beginning to look into all the ways we can celebrate the contributions of black citizens to the Moberly-Randolph County area, and one of those people is Melvin Tolson, and honor him who was born here and contributed later at other locations around the country, a lifetime of work in the form of poetry, educational efforts. He was a columnist and became a politician. Melvin B. Tolson, the B stands for Beau Norris, was born in Moberly on February 5th, 1898. Although you can find in some resources that he wasn't born until 1900. But frankly, the family of Melvin Tolson didn't stay here that long, so we're kind of leaning towards the fact that he was born in 1898. He was one of, four children. His father was Alonzo Tolson, and his mother was Lara Hurt Tolson. Alonzo, the father, was a Methodist minister, and his mother was a seamstress. And they are recorded as living in Moberly at 725 South 6th in 1896. The elder Tolson traveled extensively as he was called to different churches in both Missouri and Iowa. Now, we've tried to research which church he served in the Moberly area. We're not sure. We cannot find that information. And lots of times the early church for black Americans was in homes of black Americans, and so not much in the way of records were kept. But we are aware that there was a United Methodist Church near the area of Citibank's parking lot, close to the Grant AME Chapel, and that may have been an area where the church was located where Elder Tolson preached. But he did serve in the Moberly area. Now, finally, the family, after 2 years, settled in Kansas City, and his parents really stressed education for each of their children. Melvin graduated from high school in Kansas. He enrolled in Park College and later transferred to Lincoln University in Pennsylvania because it was a less expensive place for him to go. Tolson excelled in speech, debate, drama, and classical literature. And while he was at Lincoln, he met his wife-to-be and married Ruth Southall during his senior year and graduated that year with honors in 1923. Now, Ruth was an attractive redhead, and she had caught Melvin's eye at a school dance. And by a way of a bet with a classmate, Melvin had asked her to dance not once, but three times. Ruth would later say that, quote, "It was his personality and intellect that attracted me, not his dancing ability," unquote. The couple had four children, with two of the children following Melvin into education as university professors. Most who recognize the name of Melvin Tolson knows that he became a noted poet. However, his talents were first reflected in drawing, in art. And while his artwork was quite good, a comment from a person he looked up to caused him to change his focus to prose and poetry, because he wanted to be the best at whatever he did. Tolson taught English and speech at Wiley College in Texas from 1924 to 1947. Wiley was a historically famous black Methodist Episcopal college. It had a superior reputation, and Tolson, with his high energy, soon became a star there. By 1930, Tolson had built an award-winning debate team and the team debated other college teams, including the University of Michigan in Chicago, and later established a first interracial debate with Oklahoma City University. In 1947, Tolson began teaching at Langston University in Oklahoma and continued there for 17 years. While teaching, he came into contact with a number of civil rights activists, including James Farmer and Herman Sweet. Melvin was appointed the Poet Laureate of Liberia in 1947, and he penned a poem for the nation's centennial in 1953 entitled Libretto for the Republic of Liberia. He later entered politics and was elected the mayor of Langston, Oklahoma, and served there from 1954 to 1960. Now, Melvin Tolson was known as a man that was, quote, funny, witty, humoristic, slapstick, rude, cruel, bitter, and hilarious. Reviewer Carl Shapiro described him that way in a magazine called the Harlem Gallery. Poet Langston Hughes described him as no highbrow. Students revere and love him. Kids from the cotton fields like him. Cow punchers understand him. He's a great talker. So obviously, Tolson was a great poet and he achieved a great deal. But there was something else that made the name of Melvin Tolson a household word, and that was, in one word, movie, The Great Debaters, with its lead actor and director Denzel Washington. The movie was based on a true story of Melvin Tolson's debate team at Wiley. However, the movie chose Harvard as its competition rather than the actual University of California. And the plot revolves around Tolson, played by Denzel Washington, that explores many of the social issues during the Great Depression, particularly those hardships that were endured by African Americans. This included the insults, slurs, and the lynchings that occurred during this period. The movie depicts the actual team members, such as James Farmer Jr., played by Forrest Whitaker, and Samantha Book, in real life, Henrietta Bell Wells. And Wells also became a good poet, a great poet, and she has much of her work housed in the Library of Congress. The movie script is well written and is stated relatively accurate, but does leave out the fact that the Wiley debate team was not even allowed to call themselves victors following that University of California debate / movie Harvard. This was due to the fact that blacks were not members of the official debate society in which they were participating. And black debaters were finally allowed to join that society following the end of World War II. The movie was released in December 25, 2007, earned over $30,200,000 through 2016. And again, the actors for that film's major roles were Denzel Washington, well-known actor, Forrest Whitaker, also well-known, and a lady named Jurnee Smollett, who played Book. Tolson was honored in Moberly in 2003 as a part of the Postcards from Moberly. And that's the mural on the south side of the Randolph County Historical Society, and he has his little area, like so many others that are on there, and it's a very nice mural. Later, a special display, which is currently in the north window on the Coach Street side of the society, was created, showing the timeline for Tolson's life and the many accolades and honors that he received. We'd invite everybody to come by in the spring when we open on the 1st of April to view the mural and to view the display. And also, there are a couple books by Melvin B. Tolson, and you can read and enjoy some of his prose and poetry that's there. Now, if you'd like to look further, here's the big resource. Go to Wikipedia. Can you believe that? There is just a lot of information about Melvin Tolson there. And we also have a wonderful book at the Historical Society by Joy Flash called Melvin B. Tolson, which includes some of his poetry and a lot of detail about his life.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that story about a tremendous, we'll call him a Moberly native.
Well, he was.
Why not?
He was born here.
Born here?
You know, the interesting thing is that people don't realize this quite as much. Moberly was a little bit like St. Louis in that it was a gateway. Mm-hmm. And as the railroads expanded after the Civil War, there were lots of people who moved through this area, coming up from the south, coming down from the north, and then moved west as the west expanded. So we have the pleasant opportunity to have had all kinds of folks that did wonderful things, and we're trying to highlight some of those at the Historical Society.
Sounds great. We're going to take one more break. We'll come back. We'll also welcome your phone calls. Is something that has piqued your interest? You want to give us a ring here this morning.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter 0303 at checkout. That's harrys.com, code 0303. Enjoy.
All right, 5 before 9, J.W. Ballinger, final segment of History on the Radio. If you'd like to give us a call, be quick, 263-2424 or 800-892-2300. J.W.'s got a question.
Well, I do have a question. One of the people that I did not include in my prominent Randolph County folks in terms of taverns was the Julius Miller family. I'd like to know if anyone knows for a fact if Julius Miller and his family here in Moberly were related to the Miller beer people up in the Wisconsin area.
Milwaukee.
There is some talk that that was the case, but I've not researched it and would be interested in hearing if anyone has information on that.
What years would that have been?
Well, Julius Miller probably came here shortly after the Civil War. In fact, I think the house that we all know and think of as the Underground Railroad house, which it was not, was built by the family. And so I say shortly after the Civil War.
Julius Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. You've talked about before the down by the railroad was kind of on the subject of taverns.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I would think, plenty when the railroad was booming and at times maybe a little tough in that neighborhood.
I would say so. Originally, there were tracks down in that area that were on both sides of a wooden depot, and Sturgeon Street was the original business district. We have a picture of some of the buildings along there, and in three of them, as I stated earlier, they advertise that they have St. Louis beer. So there were a lot of breweries in St. Louis at the time, and that's what people were looking for, and that's where they sold them. One thing we're hoping to do, those buildings down there, since there is a picture, we're trying to determine if we can use that as an outline to do a little village for the railroad out in the park, where we'd have a general store and a cafe and maybe a hotel and that sort of thing for people to see as they ride the train. And we're hoping that some of the kids out at the technical school can help us with the designs and what have you.
I would think people, after hearing this program, might go out and try to rent The Great Debaters and watch it now.
I would hope so. And it is a very good movie. Anything Denzel Washington does is really good. And I'm thankful to him for taking this subject of Melvin B. Tolson and raising it to the level of the movie, because lots of times what people know about people is what they see in the movie or hear on the radio and things like that.
Yeah. Final minute, at the Historical Society downtown, you've got this display. Anything else you
want
to promote?
Unfortunately, we are closed for the winter.
Yep.
It's just too cold to turn the heat on, but we'll be opening the 1st of April, and we've been working on some displays, and a newsletter just went out, and it's a very fine newsletter, and I appreciate the volunteers that worked with Joyce Campbell to do that. We've got a number of things going on, including maybe an open house at the Railroad Museum coming up in the spring, and we hope that people will come out. We're hoping one of our major projects for the next year is to put a roof on that building.
Okay.
And anybody who would like to donate and help us out with that, we'd certainly appreciate it.
Well, thanks for braving the cold and coming on in. Very
absolutely
informative.
Glad
I enjoyed
to be here.
It. Yeah, History on the Radio on Quix.
This is Discover Nature.